Of Minnesota. Welcome into FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. You know, I only host the show Wednesdays through Fridays, but man, I have missed a ton of news since I last hosted on Friday, and we are going to get to it coming up in the second half of the show, as we'll be talking about how Democrats should try to oppose Donald Trump's Supreme Court nomination. We'll also talk about, at least at the state legislative level, how we have six QAnon candidates running on behalf of the Republican Party in the state legislature, and it appears at least one or two at least do have a chance of possibly winning. So that's coming up a little bit later on. But first, happy to welcome back Patrick Coulican to the airwaves. He is the editor-in-chief for the Minnesota Reformer. Website is minnesotareformer.com, as we'll be chatting through some local and state political news here in Minnesota. Hey, Patrick, how you doing today? Glad to have you back on the airwaves.
Good to be here.
Absolutely. So a number of pieces I want to highlight that you guys have been working on at the Minnesota Reformer. And this first one has to do with this lawsuit that was just filed against the Minnesota State Universities and Colleges, MinSCU. And this has to do with this open records law, where basically someone filed a lawsuit against the University of Minnesota because they were not able to access records that they think should be public. So tell us a little bit about this background on this lawsuit that was recently filed against MinSCU.
Yeah, we have a guest commentary today from the plaintiff who wanted to get a contract with Minnesota State to do some of their online registration. He didn't win the contract, but he wanted to know some of the background, so he was looking to get some public records on that, and they just flat out denied him. It's an important case for those of us who believe in transparent government and open records, the ability of a private actor like this plaintiff to sue for records. So I was happy that we were able to run that guest commentary today for the sake of government transparency.
Yeah, because technically in Minnesota, we do have an open records law where anyone who is a government agency or public college or university, yeah, they have to keep these records and they need to be open to the public. And this lawsuit, as I recall, is going to be going straight to the Supreme Court. And as you can imagine, this would have a pretty big impact if, let's say, the Supreme Court rules in favor of the university on this, because, well, that would significantly hamper journalists like yourself from accessing records from government agencies and public universities and colleges.
Absolutely. It's an important precedent, and so that's why we're watching it closely. Even if it were the ruling at the Supreme Court were to go against folks who are defending government transparency, you might see a federal action as well.
So you've had some experience with this too, trying to access open records from different public agencies. And it sounds like, well, even though they're technically supposed to have these records, a lot of times, well, it's not the easiest to try to get records from public institutions. And I think you yourself, being a journalist, have run into this situation before, correct?
Yeah, I have asked for records, internal emails, for instance. I've been sort of tipped off to correspondence, and then when you ask for it, it's just not there, and it's just baffling. And then the other problem is that, you know, who's policing this? What recourse do I have if they're just destroying all their records almost immediately? So those are two issues with the law, as far as I can tell, or the administration of the law. They're not retaining their records like they should, I think, if we really wanted to have transparent government. and we don't really have much recourse when they deny our requests. More or less, there needs to be a presumption that all records belong to the public. And I think there's an attitude on the part of some in government that it's the reverse, that all records belong to the government, and in some cases we give them to the public.
So I'm trying to figure out what exactly the justification would be from the perspective of the University of Minnesota and I suppose other public institutions too, because as I look at this law, it seems pretty cut and dry that they have to keep these records, but that's not necessarily always been the case. So I'm just kind of curious as to what their justification is for saying, well, we don't necessarily have to follow this law that's in the books.
Well, we'll hear oral arguments. I think it's October 12th, and I should note it's Minnesota State, not University of Minnesota.
Oh, gotcha.
I think the idea here is that they don't think that a private citizen should be able to bring this litigation, that he doesn't have standing in this suit. But, I mean, I guess, my question is if a citizen doesn't have standing, then who does?
And the dynamics of this are pretty interesting, too, because it's not necessarily a partisan fight, as it sounds like Keith Ellison, the Attorney General of Minnesota, has taken the side of Minskew in this case. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, in fairness to the Attorney General, his job is to be the state's lawyer and to be the lawyer for state agencies. But you're also right that this is not necessarily a partisan issue. There are plenty in government who think that they don't agree that with me that we should have really open and transparent government, and they want to protect their ability to take confidential advice. They want to protect people's privacy and so forth. So you're right, not a partisan issue. Ellison, in his role as the state's essentially chief legal officer, will be defending the state against Minskew in this case.
Gotcha. So it's more the case, too, that he, well, pretty much has to defend them, being that he is, the top attorney in Minnesota. So interesting
right.
to see how this plays out in the court system through the Minnesota State Supreme Court. We're speaking with Patrick Koulikan. He is the editor-in-chief for the Minnesota Reformer, minnesotareformer.com, about some of the recent news stories that they've been writing about. And this next one, Patrick, is absolutely crazy because I had no idea this was going on and that this was a thing. And these have to do with catalytic converters being stolen all throughout not just Minnesota, but the entire country. And by the way, if you're not familiar with what a catalytic converter is, I'm not myself, they basically act as a device in your car that, well, prevents them from giving off those harmful chemical car emissions. So they kind of help your car run a little more efficiently. But apparently, there's been a rise of thefts of these things. So tell us about this and why people are trying to steal these things.
Yeah, we don't do a whole lot of crime writing at the Reformer, but this story interested us because it really has a socioeconomic aspect. Catalytic converters have a lot of precious metals in them, and scrappers can sell them for like $200, apparently. And they're very easy to take off. You just kind of need something to cut through metal. So you spend $100 on that, and then you're kind of off to the races. And the reason we think this is happening now is the pandemic has created a couple different scenarios. One is I think it's been difficult for addicts because of the isolation and also the financial stress. So they're looking for money, and a lot of people have their cars. They're working from home, and so their car's parked out on the street. And this is where the thieves are often doing the work. And then if they slide under a car and it looks like they're just a guy working under a car, it's not unusual. There's no reason that you would think that a crime was being committed. But they can take these things off really easily, apparently. And so there's just kind of a scourge of them. And I know it's pretty frustrating for people living in Minneapolis, especially, where they've already been hit with obviously the unrest following George Floyd's police killing of George Floyd. There has been a rise in violent some shootings in some neighborhoods, and then to have this happening as well, because they can be really expensive to replace as well.
Yeah, as I look through the article you guys wrote, yeah, these things are not cheap whatsoever, where you had the one person who talked about his catalytic converter getting stolen, which normally would have a value of $3,000. Fortunately for him, his insurance was able to help out and reduce that cost to $500. But either way, that's still a big chunk of change for something that people don't think a whole lot about that's being stolen from cars. So, yeah, I had no idea.
It must be happening a lot, too, because this story got a lot of readership, and so I think it's like everybody seems to know somebody. I mean, we had a guy in the story. It happened to twice. So it's really resonating with our readers.
So it's even gotten the attention of some members at the state legislature, as it sounds like State Senator John Marty, a DFLer, is proposing some legislation to at least curb this. And it sounds like from the legislation, his concern is that, well, people who are stealing these things are, well, selling this to a third-party vendor and making a little bit of money. So is it Marty's legislation that would at least try to disincentivize people from trying to sell these things to third-party vendors once they steal them?
Right. I mean, if you think about it, if you're the scrapyard and people are always selling you, the same guy keeps selling you catalytic converters, you know, and he doesn't exactly look like a model citizen, you know, you probably should start wondering, you know, where are these things coming from? And so I think they would create, the law would mandate, almost like with pawn shops, where they put a crackdown on stolen goods showing up at pawn shops. It's the same kind of regulatory structure that they hope. If there's nobody to sell the catalytic converter to that you've stolen, then obviously the crime for it would probably go way down.
All right, one more piece I want to talk about with you here, Patrick, and this is something that you brought up, a conversation you had over the weekend with a DFL operative who sounds like they were expressing some concerns about the lack of door knocking among Democratic candidates, and this kind of has been a divide in the Democratic Party, not just locally here in Minnesota, but nationally in terms of, well, how do we still go out and campaign? Do we go out and physically knock on people's doors, even though there is a pandemic going on? It's a big point of contention for a lot of Democratic campaigns where you have some that say, yeah, we're just going to go out and door knock like normal, obviously still social distance and wear masks, where you have other campaigns that say it's not safe, we're still going to continue virtually campaigning. But it sounds like as you talked to a DFL operative, they were expressing some concerns that, well, the Republicans could be beating the Democrats in terms of going out and knocking on doors.
Right, and That's certainly door knocking, especially in a state legislative race. A state House member represents 40,000 people. So door knocking those undecided voters, if you can just get your name, if you can get them to sort of remember you from a door knock or one of your volunteers, that can make a difference because name recognition is always so low on these races. So door knocking is important, especially for House races, state House races. I did have a legislator actually contact me yesterday, I think it was, and he said, you know what, we'll just let the Republicans, this is a DFL lawmaker, he said, I'll be happy to let the Republicans door knock because he thinks that, and this is his experience apparently, suburban moms, the type of people who are answering the door, they don't want door knocking. The pandemic risk, and then also just everybody's sort of overburdened with doing homeschooling and working from home or if they're having to work out of the house and then do the homeschooling. So there could definitely be, an upside, to not door knocking. I guess we'll know in November.
Yeah, it's a tough position for a lot of Democrats where sometimes you almost wish you would be a Republican where you would sit there and think, well, who cares about this? Our party thinks the pandemic is a conspiracy anyways. We're just going to go and knock on doors no matter what. Democrats are right. Actually thinking with a little bit more of a conscience on this. And as you said, it's those local races where really you need those door knockers. I mean, when you're talking about a congressional race, whether it's Dean Phillips or Angie Craig, probably don't need that so much when you can virtually campaign and and run TV ads. But yeah, for someone trying to, let's say, unseat a state senator who's a Republican, that's a big tool in your arsenal to be able to go and door knock and ask someone for your support in person. It's a big, big asset. And I don't envy any person who's running for office trying to balance safety versus, well, trying to get your name out there so you can win.
Right. But there's also a risk here for Republicans that if they're kind of blasé about the risk and they knock on an undecided voter's door, a sort of middle of the road voter, and you know they're not wearing a mask, and that person that they've knocked on the door is conscious about the pandemic and has a healthy fear of it of getting infected, then that, you know, wow, you've lost their vote. So that's really the risk of blithely going out and door knocking without considering the downside.
We've been speaking with Patrick Kulikin. He is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Website is minnesotareformer.com. Encourage you to check out minnesotareformer.com to get the latest in state politics here in Minnesota. Patrick, as always, enjoy the Wednesday visits, and we'll chat with you next week.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
All right, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, just you and me the rest of the hour. So if you want to chime in with a phone call, feel free to give us a ring at the station. But we still have lots more news stories to cover here on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. So we'll get to that coming up next here on AM 950.
Joe Biden debates the big orange buffoon coming up on Tuesday, September 29th, and you have a chance to watch it with us and other AM 950 listeners at Crooner's Supper Club. Crooner's has an outdoor stage with a large TV screen and great sound. They've been doing socially distanced concerts all summer and work hard to make sure everyone is safe. So come watch the debate with us and hear Trump make cutting-edge arguments like this.
This is a tough hurricane. One of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water.
Doors open at 7:30 with the debate beginning at 8. Tickets are $25 and include one complimentary drink and one seat at a two-person socially distanced table. Space is very limited, though, because of safety, and when tickets are gone, there will not be more available. Tickets are pre-sale only at am950radio.com. Again, that's AM950's Debate Watch Party, Tuesday, September 29th at Crooner Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65. Tickets and details at am950radio.com.
God bless Minneapolis and God bless the United States.
Is it time to downsize but don't know where to start? Give the House Geeks with Bricks Real Estate a call. We are experienced in making this process as smooth and as easy as possible. Whether it is with pricing your home or assistance in finding movers or any other professionals that you might need to help get your home ready, we are here for you. Take the worry away and give us a call today at 651-303-0019. Again, that is 651-303-0019 or online anytime at housegeeks.com.
Crooner's Supper Club is leading the Twin Cities back to live performances this summer with two new distance-safe outdoor dinner show options. The popular Lakeside Drive-In concerts will continue with new shows added throughout the summer. And not to be outdone, Crooner's is also introducing a new Lakeside Cafe in its outdoor patio space designed to offer a more intimate, distance-safe outdoor dinner show experience. So head to Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65 this summer for some delicious food and great music. Make your reservations now at croonersmn.com.
Make a difference in another person's life by donating your car with Auto Technical. Auto Technical helps families in need of transportation with reconditioned vehicles. Your gift will make a difference. Here's Richard, the owner of Auto Technical, talking about how he got started helping families in need with transportation.
Hey, my wife told me when we first started, she says, "You're going to find this so rewarding." And I really didn't know what she meant. But when people come in and... Oh, man, give me a second.
Take your time.
They come in, the kids will be jumping around, they're so happy. Imagine getting on the bus with three kids, 7 o'clock in the morning, take them to some daycare, and then getting on the bus and going back to work. People sometimes break down in tears and can't stop. And I think we all can relate to the time we didn't have a car.
Donate your car today and learn more at autotechnical.org.
FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, the Wednesday edition of the show. Hello to Uncle Curtis of Native Roots Radio, who is watching on our Facebook page. Also, Don has checked in. She made a comment about QAnon conspiracy theories and how there is a member of the Republican Party serving in the state legislature that is trying to disavow QAnon. I'll get to Don's comment in just a second because she brings up a good point about Representative Pat Garofalo denouncing QAnon. We'll talk about that in just a moment, but first, let's get to our buddy Gary in Minneapolis, who's been hanging on the phone lines for a while. Gary, what are you thinking about today?
Well, yeah, I've done door knocking, and I like to do it, but a lot of people either aren't home or don't answer the door, I guess, and you get a positive result sometimes when you talk to someone personally. But I think it might backfire this year with the COVID because people are leery about all this stuff. And so I'm going to do literature drops and plan to just do literature drops without knocking. I think people understand you're respecting them with the virus, some of them anyway.
All right. Appreciate the phone call, Gary. Yeah, literature can work as well. Not quite to the same effect as knocking on a door, since oftentimes when people get pieces of literature in the mail, they usually just end up throwing those in the garbage can. I at least do that myself. My rule of thumb when I get the mail is that if any piece of mail has a whole bunch of color on it, like a whole bunch of different colors, I usually know that's going to be spam and it goes right in the trash. But it's a challenging campaign season. Yeah, it's a balancing act for a lot of the candidates out there as to whether you go door knock or if you go all virtual or all by mail. It's definitely a tough situation, and especially when you have Republicans on the other side who have for the most part, kind of ignored those rules and decided to go knock on doors willy-nilly. But as Patrick brought up, Patrick Kulikan of the Minnesota Reformer, there is a chance that could backfire if you do happen to knock on someone's door who does want you to social distance and does want you to wear a mask. Well, there is a chance that could backfire against you. All right, so let's talk about QAnon and the Minnesota State Legislature. This article was getting a ton of views over on the Star Tribune's website as the Strib had this write-up about how six candidates for the Minnesota State Legislature, all Republicans obviously, have at least endorsed or partially come out in favor of the QAnon conspiracy theory. Now, if you're not familiar with the QAnon conspiracy theory, basically it posits that all Democrats are pedophiles and they somehow are running an evil cabal that is going to take over the world and indoctrinate their children. Something like that. There's a lot of different variations of QAnon, but basically they're bat-blank crazy conspiracy theories. And we have six Republicans, candidates for the state legislature, that are trying to, well, get to an elected office. Now, here's the list of the six candidates running for the legislature that are supporters of QAnon. We have Julie Dupre, a Republican challenging a DFLer Melissa Franzen in the state Senate in the Southwest Metro suburbs, which I believe includes portions of Eden Prairie and I think Edina. As she says, QAnon is a really great information source and one of many that I use. Sadly, Julie Dupre actually has the least support for QAnon compared to some of these other people that I'm going to tell you about. She's at least sort of the most sane out of the rest of these. We have Melissa Moore, who is a state delegate for the Republican Party. She's been a delegate since 2016, and she's covering a House seat that runs through St. Louis Park and Hopkins, where she's posted things on Twitter, such as WWG1WGA. The acronym for that is Where We Go One, We Go All. That's a big calling card of QAnon. She also has said that she is a hashtag digital soldier. Whatever happened to the days where a digital soldier just used to be like a 350-pound guy sitting in his basement playing online video games? Apparently, even the term digital soldier has been hijacked by the far right. So, yeah, she is definitely on board with the movement. We also have Gary Hare, who is a Republican-endorsed candidate for a Minnesota House seat in Bloomington. And he is described as, quote, inviting all the churchgoers to partake in the Great Awakening. again, the Great Awakening has to do with QAnon, where they posit that eventually with this Great Awakening, somehow Donald Trump is going to arrest all of the Democrats in the country, send them to jail, and their child sex ring will be exposed. That is apparently what will happening. That what will happen with this Great Awakening slash, I guess you could call it sort of rapture. They've used that language as well. That's Gary Heyer running for a Republican seat in Bloomington. We have Julia Buria, who is a member of the Mountain Iron City Council in northern Minnesota. She's been in the news before, as even before this QAnon stuff came out. She sparked controversy when she posted a graphic image comparing the Holocaust to Minnesota's response to the pandemic. Republican leaders later said that Buria had apologized, but days later at a city council meeting, she claimed she was forced to apologize and insisted she did nothing wrong. And as you can expect, she's also a big QAnon supporter, as she has tweeted multiple references to QAnon. She tweeted back on May 30th that there is a group of black patriots protecting a lone police officer from Antifa terrorists. In April, she retweeted a woman who wrote, "If only people knew how many Satanists are actually in the government, and pedophilia is going to bring the whole house of cards down." That is Buria running for a legislative seat in northern Minnesota. Two more to highlight. Elizabeth Bangert owns a child care business in St. Peter. She frequently posts recorded videos from inside her vehicle to her Minnesota Citizen lobbyist page. I won't even go into what some of this content is. You can check out her Facebook page, and it is absolutely crazy. The last one, the sixth candidate who is a QAnon supporter running for the legislature, Joe Thalman. He is running for a House seat that covers parts of the Southwest Metro suburbs. He concluded his remarks at a candidate forum hosted by the League of Women Voters in Bloomington last month by saying, "We're seeking truth and justice, and where we go one, we go all." Basically, whenever you hear someone say, "Where we go one, we go all," yeah, that is code word for QAnon. So there is something key to point out about these six candidates, because you would look at this and say, well, my gosh, are we going to really get six members of the state legislature who are QAnon supporters? Chances are probably not, because if you look at the districts that these six candidates are running for, at least five are in very heavy Democratic districts. Like, for instance, take Melissa Moore. Her district that she's running for includes St. Louis Park and Hopkins. That's a big Democratic district. The only one that I could find where maybe they would have a chance at getting into the state legislature would be, I think it's Thalman's race, who is running for a seat that represents part of the Southwest Metro suburbs. At least as I was looking back at Ballotpedia, it was a 52-47 race in favor of the Democrats back in 2016. So perhaps there's a chance that he could get to the legislature, but at least in these five other races, a little skeptical that they could actually win, but terrifying nonetheless that they are the official Republican nominee candidates in their local races. Now, going back to Don's comment that she just made a couple of minutes ago on our Facebook page, she encouraged us to check out a message from Representative Pat Garofalo. He is a Republican in the Minnesota State House. Now, here is his quote from his post. He says, "QAnon is a crackpot conspiracy group that has zero legitimacy. Any candidate for office who supports or advocates QAnon nonsense is unqualified to be an elected official. The Republican Party should rescind the endorsement of any candidate who supports QAnon." So I'll give Representative Pat Garofalo, Republican, credit for sending that message out. But here's where we have to take this a step further. Let's say one of these candidates does end up winning. Well, if they do end up winning, are they going to be stripped of any committee assignments? Or is it just going to be business as usual and we'll let them serve their regular term? I ask this because at the federal level, we have Marjorie Taylor Greene. She is running for a congressional seat in Georgia in a very heavy Republican district. She already has the nomination and has probably like a 99% chance of getting to the U.S. House. She has been disavowed by members of the Republican leadership in the U.S. House. But again, I would ask this question once she gets to the U.S. House. Is she going to face any consequences, or is it going to be business as usual? I'm very skeptical that they actually will hold these QAnon supporters accountable should they be elected. But good statements out of Garofalo, but hopefully they can at least back up what they're saying about trying to not endorse them whatsoever if they do get elected. All right, we're going to take a break in just a second here on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. We'll take your phone calls, but I also want to dive into some strategy for how Democrats should try and oppose the Donald Trump nomination for the U.S. Supreme Court. We're going to talk about that coming up next here on FYI Politics. Joe Biden debates the big orange buffoon coming up on Tuesday, September 29th, and you have a chance to watch it with us and other AM 950 listeners at Crooner's Supper Club. Crooner's has an outdoor stage with a large TV screen and great sound. They've been doing socially distanced concerts all summer and work hard to make sure everyone is safe. So come watch the debate with us and hear Trump make cutting-edge arguments like this.
This is a tough hurricane. One of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water.
Doors open at 7:30 with the debate beginning at 8. Tickets are $25 and include one complimentary drink and one seat at a two-person socially distanced table. Space is very limited, though, because of safety, and when tickets are gone, there will not be more available. Tickets are pre-sale only at am950radio.com. Again, that's AM950's Debate Watch Party, Tuesday, September 29th at Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65. Tickets and details at am950radio.com.
God bless Minneapolis and God bless the United States.
In the Army National Guard, family means everything.
They really appreciate what she's done as a sister as well as a soldier and, you know, supporting the country.
Our parents, they were really supportive that all five of us would join.
Family members that are soldiers in the Army National Guard inspire and influence, setting a path for others.
It's validating knowing that, you know, I kind of did my part to make sure this is what they actually wanted and that they feel the same way I do. I'm really proud that we get to help shape the future, and I know that my sisters are going to be amazing soldiers.
Serving part-time in the Army National Guard instills pride that you and your family will share in.
A lot of pride, and they're just out there doing something every day and then serving the country as well.
I got my education because of the Guard. I got to travel a little bit and experience a whole different culture.
Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
Nightingale at 26th and Lindale is open for in-person service. They have a lovely socially distanced patio and interior available for safe and thoughtful dining and drinks. Nightingale has reservations via resi.com with plenty of tables and bar spots saved for walk-up reservations. Nightingale's temporary summer hours are Sunday through Thursday from 4 to 10 p.m., Friday and Saturday 4 p.m. to midnight. Last call for full menu 30 minutes before close with curbside takeout by calling 612-354-7060. Info, menu, and updates at nightingalempls.com.
Hey, I guess we found a new name for our show.
Really? What's the new name?
Pilots Progressive Party.
How did you ever come up with that?
Pilots our name and progressive fun is our game.
Well, what's that about?
It's a one-hour news show with progressive guests and information you normally don't hear on the radio.
Well, that's so exciting. I have a few ideas for guests myself.
I know they'll be progressive.
Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. on AM 950.
The Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Robert Pilot getting in on things as he sent me a nice little meme that he's been sharing around on social media in response to QAnon. Here's what he sent. By the way, if liberals were capable of creating viruses, controlling the media, and drinking the blood of children in order to live, I'm pretty sure we could have pulled a weekend at Bernie's on Ruth Bader Ginsburg until after November, so you may want to reevaluate some of your conspiracy theories. Gotta love that, as Robert's been sharing that tweet from, I think, Corey Forrester over on Twitter. Speaking of which, Robert Pilot, he is hosting Pilot's Progressive Party tonight from 5 until 6 o'clock, as he and Wendy are going to be speaking with John Olson, who is a Senate candidate in District 20. They'll also be speaking with Kathy Chavers and Boyce DeFort with Kathy Chavers right there. So make sure you tune in to Pilot's Progressive Party. That is tonight from 5 until 6 p.m. with Robert and Wendy Pilot. So let's talk a little bit about the Supreme Court nomination, since Donald Trump is expected to name his replacement for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, it looks like, on Friday or sometime on Saturday. Now, he's expected to nominate someone who very likely would overturn Roe versus Wade and perhaps make abortion illegal in many, many states. But John Wasserman over on Twitter, he's with NBC News, pointed out a really interesting stat about Donald Trump and how a nomination of someone who wants to overturn Roe versus Wade could backfire against him. And it's this stat that has to do with Trump's support back in 2016. Donald Trump back in 2016 received more votes than any other Republican candidate in history for president from pro-choice voters. In fact, 22% of his support was made up of pro-choice voters. That is a higher percentage than any Republican candidate has gotten in history since, well, Roe v. Wade was the case. So it's interesting because even though Trump largely did downplay the abortion issue in 2016, voters with mostly pro-choice attitudes, again, made up more than one-fifth of his support base back in 2016. And in fact, they make up an even higher number when you look at some of the key battleground states this year. Pro-choice voters in Iowa made up 25% of Donald Trump's base. In Florida, 24%. Pennsylvania, 24%. Michigan, 23%. Arizona, 21%. Wisconsin and Ohio both had 20% of their pro-choice voters ended up siding with Donald Trump. Now, if we're to compare that with Hillary Clinton's numbers back in 2016, her numbers in terms of support from pro-life voters, they were pretty close to normal. But that's a really key stat right there. Back in 2016, Donald Trump received more votes from people who identified as being pro-choice than any other Republican presidential candidate in history. So this could really shift things in terms of how the election could shape out if Democrats frame this issue correctly as to whether Roe v. Wade should be overturned. There's another aspect, too, to bring up, because normally Supreme Court races, at least throughout history, have typically fired up Republicans more than Democrats, especially when you look back in 2016 and years prior. Typically, that Supreme Court issue was much more important to Republicans than Democrats. But I think that could switch this year. And it has to do with the fact that Roe versus Wade is now very much under threat. So in essence, it's now people who are pro-choice or who are more likely to be Democrats. They're the ones now playing defense, where they're seeing an issue that is very important to them now under threat. And that's very different from the dynamic we had prior to 2016, when it was mostly Republicans and people who were pro-life as being perceived as being on defense, since they were saying, well, if we allow more liberal justices, that means abortion rights are going to expand. I feel like that dynamic has now shifted and probably fired up more Democratic voters about Supreme Court being a big issue coming up this fall. So let's talk strategy now for both the Biden and the Trump campaigns and how they should frame the Supreme Court issue. Now, as I brought up, if Biden can capitalize this and highlight Roe versus Wade in a way that won't alienate too many voters, I think he can make a powerful argument to peel away some of these pro-choice voters who ended up voting for Donald Trump back in 2016. But he has to kind of thread the needle on this one, because I think his most powerful argument on the Supreme Court is that if you appoint a conservative justice, it's pretty much going to mean the end of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, depending on whatever you want to call that. So I think if he can find a way to make the abortion issue maybe like a companion or kind of the second most important issue next to the ACA, I think he could really get a lot of political capital out of it. So far, we have not seen a lot of talk from the Biden campaign on the Roe versus Wade issue. He's mainly been focusing on the ACA, which I have no problem with. I do think that needs to be the main focus when it comes to talking about this Supreme Court nomination. But I still think he also should make it a point to at least somewhat highlight the Roe versus Wade issue, since there are potentially some voters that he could peel away from Trump's base, that voted for him in 2016, despite the fact that they were pro-choice. Now, from the Trump campaign's angle, They are trying to get a nominee to the Supreme Court before Election Day. And I think that's a mistake on the part of Republicans, because I would think of it from this perspective. If I'm the Donald Trump campaign, I would want to be dangling that carrot in front of his base, saying that, well, if I'm reelected, that means I can nominate a conservative justice. But if he gets someone on the court before Election Day, that kind of takes away that incentive from some of his voters to know that, well, if you vote for me, that means a Supreme Court justice. So I think from his perspective, he would be better off waiting until after the election. Now, I know you might be sitting there and thinking, well, what happens if Trump loses? Does that mean he doesn't nominate a justice? Well, no, not at all. I'm looking at this from a Republican strategist perspective where, yeah, you can just go ahead and lie if you're Donald Trump and Republicans and you lose the election. Just go ahead and nominate someone during a lame duck session. But I think they would be better off saying that we're going to not nominate anyone until after the election. In their case, if they win, they're in great shape. But if they lose, just do it in a lame duck session. Sure, it would make a lot of people angry, but at that point, you're a lame duck president, and you probably have lots of lame duck members of Congress. What are they going to care anyway if they're perceived as being hypocrites, since they just got voted out of office anyways? So it's an interesting dynamic from both sides on this. So like I said, I think Biden needs to kind of thread that needle. He for sure needs to make sure the ACA is a big part of the Supreme Court debate, but I think he also doesn't want to necessarily stay away from making Roe versus Wade an issue as well. Now, ultimately, going to the Trump strategy, why are they making this push to have a new justice on the court before Election Day? Well, it has nothing to do with the Roe versus Wade issue. It has everything to do with Obamacare, because coming up on November 10th, the U.S. Supreme Court is set to hear a case that could lead to, well, Obamacare being repealed and being ruled unconstitutional. That case begins on November 10th, and from the perspective of Donald Trump and Republicans, if they can get that conservative justice on the court by November 10th, well, that increases the chance that they can repeal Obamacare. So even though from an electoral strategy, they're probably better off waiting until after the election, no, it has everything to do with getting Obamacare repealed. And that's exactly why they're trying to get this thing or get this justice on the court before November 10th. So that's why we're seeing this big push to get a justice on the courts before the November election. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Got Mark and Fridley who wants to chime in. Hey there, Mark. What are you thinking about today?
Hi. A lot. First, you're a former accountant, right?
I am, yes.
Okay. You were aware of the Panama Papers, correct?
Oh, yeah. Something that has not gotten a lot of attention, but should have been a big deal a few years ago when those came out.
Well, hold that thought, because the International Consortium for Investigative Journalists that uncovered the Panama Papers, that had tens of thousands of the world's most powerful and influential rich people, and there was a single arrest. In case you missed it, which is pretty much the rest of the world, the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists released a second report with a second whistleblower that is just as huge and damaging. And so we cannot trust the government, big technology, CEOs, bankers, corporate media to protect us. Those groups aren't going to save us. And it's one of the reasons is because, you know, we've been focused on COVID-19, not the Afghanistan Papers, not the Panama Papers. And another case is you brought
just
up...
Just about one more minute, Mark, before we get questions
about Q Anonymous all the time, because mm-hmm. people want to know what I think they are. And what I think they are is I think that they're a psychological operation. But you cannot discount the fact that the victims of Jeff Epstein, of which the Department of Justice acknowledged knowledge of their activity starting in 1994, and they did nothing, okay? So what they did was they went after minor victims. The government knew about it, administration after administration after administration, and did nothing about it. Jerry Sandusky, the same thing. Harvey Weinstein, the same thing.
Mark, we're going to have to leave it there because we are just about running out of time on this segment, but do appreciate the phone call. And you're correct about these cases with Jerry Sandusky or Jeffrey Epstein or Harvey Weinstein and whoever else. The difference is between them and, well, QAnon conspiracy theories is that, well, there at least was some evidence to back up the fact that, well, Sandusky and Epstein and others were extremely creepy individuals. Meanwhile, yeah, you have QAnon who has, well, no evidence to back up what they're talking about whatsoever. We'll take a break and come on back with the final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson coming up next.
Did you let animals pick your insurance? You really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates? Or how about a celebrity quarterback or fake university saving you money? There's a lot of marketing stunts when it comes to insurance, but what you really need is someone looking out for you. Call Array Insurance, and they will work hard to find you the best insurance coverage and rates. So avoid gimmicks and call Cheryl at Array, 763-504-3067 or arrayinsurance.com. Array Insurance, working hard for you.
Crooner's Supper Club is leading the Twin Cities back to live performances this summer with two new distance-safe outdoor dinner show options. The popular Lakeside Drive-In concerts will continue with new shows added throughout the summer. And not to be outdone, Crooner's is also introducing a new Lakeside Cafe in its outdoor patio space designed to offer a more intimate, distance-safe outdoor dinner show experience. So head to Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65 this summer for some delicious food and great music. Make your reservations now at croonersmn.com.
No matter if your kids sit at home on their laptops for online classes or go back to school, it's finally time to clean up the summer mess. And Zero Res can help. They don't just make your home look clean. Their patented powered water safely and effectively cleans and sanitizes carpets, tile, upholstery, area rugs, and more. So get back to clean with three rooms of carpet Zero Resified starting at just $139. Plus save 10% when you get your carpets and air ducts clean. Just mention AM950 when you call. That's 952-ZERORES or ZeroResMinnesota.com.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Join us for New Beginnings, Saturday mornings at 11, brought to you in part by Vision Loss Resources.
Hi, this is Chad from AM950. With the recent round of storms that came through the Twin Cities, some of you may have sustained damage to your roofing, siding, or windows. Call Snap Construction, the company we trust, to see if you sustained damage. Snap Construction is arguably the most well-reviewed roofing, siding, and window company in the metro. Ryan, how are you able to help people that may have had damage from these storms?
Well, Chad, with experience, we've helped thousands of Minnesotans with their storm damage claims. If you suspect your home has damage or was denied in the past, give us a call for your free inspection. It can take up to a year for hail and wind damage to reveal itself. The insurance process can be complicated. We make it easy. We use the same costing software that all insurance companies rely on. As always, we stand behind our work with a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee. Don't wait. Call us for your free estimate or inspection today. 612-333-SNAP. 612-333-SNAP.
Hope to see you out at our debate-watching party coming up next Tuesday at Crooner's Supper Club off of Moore Lake and Highway 65, as it's your chance to watch the Joe Biden versus Donald Trump debate with us over at Crooner's. Now, if you're a little hesitant about attending this thing because maybe you're concerned about COVID and social distancing, keep in mind, Crooner's has been running concerts all summer long very safely, as they have all of their tables properly social distanced. Everything has been cleaned and sanitized. We'll also be outdoors under a tent, so that will hopefully make things a little bit safer. So encourage you to check it out if you have some time next Tuesday. Our debate watching party up at Crooner's. The debate will begin at 8 o'clock with doors opening at 7:30. You need to order those tickets online over at am950radio.com, am950radio.com. You need to order those ahead of time. We will not have any tickets available at the door whatsoever, so you got to order online as soon as possible. They are going very, very fast, so probably within the next few days, we're going to be sold out of these things. So if you're sitting there and hesitating, do I want to go to the AM 950 debate watch party or don't I? Order those tickets as soon as possible. They are going to be gone very, very soon. And like I said, they do a nice job up at Crooner's making sure everything is socially distanced, things are cleaned and sanitized. So head over to that debate watch party with us coming up next Tuesday, Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65. Find those tickets over at am950radio.com. A quick story I briefly want to chat about. Over the weekend, the University of Minnesota officials are a little concerned about the fact that there appeared to be a large weekend gathering of students who were violating campus rules meant to slow COVID-19. I hope as people read through this story and hear about this in the news that you don't go out and blame the college students in this case. Because think about it this way. If you have a bunch of 18 to 22-year-old socially starved kids and you put them at college, what do you expect is going to happen? They're probably going to hold some sort of party. I think the mistake is even having them back in the dorms in the first place. If you're that concerned about that, don't send them back to campus, because anyone who's 18 to 22 years old and is in college, you pretty much know what's going to happen. Even if you put all of these rules in place, they're very likely to be violated. So I don't necessarily blame the kids in this case that held those parties. It's not the smartest idea in the world, but again, what did you expect was going to happen with 18 to 22-year-old college students who have been socially starved for months on end? All right, Randy in St. Cloud, you get the final word on today's show. Welcome on in. What are you thinking about?
Well, first off, 18 to 20-year-olds are invincible. I remember that.
Yes, as does everybody, yep.
Yeah, nothing can ever hurt you. The thing about the Supreme Court and why they're pushing it now, one of the things you have to realize is it looks like McSally is going to lose down in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a special election, so Mark, God, how can I not?
Mark from Fridley, is that who you're talking about?
No. Gabbert's husband. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, Mark Kelly. Unfortunately, Randy, I am just about out of time, but I think I know where you're going with that. Yeah, the deal is if Mark Kelly ends up beating Martha McSally on November 3rd, there is a chance he could be seated by November 30th, which would cut into that Republican majority. Unfortunately, I'm not sure it would do a whole lot of good, since you would still need three GOP defectors, and, well, right now there's only two of them, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. All right, I'm out of time for today. Matt McNeil is up next, and don't forget Pilots Progressive Party tonight at 5.